When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. Who said the Monaco Grand Prix was boring? A frantic race in mixed conditions saw only 64 out of the 77 laps completed, but Sergio Perez took his first win of the season to move himself within 15 points of the World Championship lead. It looks like he's very much in the fight now, but it'll be another day of regret for Ferrari and Charles Leclerc after his botched strategy saw him down in fourth place, having led the early stages of the race. Carlos Sainz took second in the race, and then Max Verstappen rounded off the podium in third. Mercedes took a step back. Fernando Alonso looks 3 to 4 seconds off the pace deliberately and definitely didn't endear himself to those around him. But here is what's coming up on today's show.
We read through your comments about the Monaco Grand Prix. John Wyle joins us to take us through the best and worst of the driver ratings. Oliver Harden's here as well to go through the race conclusions. And then we take a look at Monaco's place on the Formula One calendar and just how equipped it can be to stay in Formula One in the future. And I'm pleased to say that rejoining the podcast today is from Formula Nerds, James McKenzie. Welcome back to Talking Point.
Hi, thanks for having me back. It's good to be back.
Yeah, great. No problem. It was a strange race, wasn't it, Monaco? Because, I mean, they're still seeing some comments about of the race actually being quite boring. But, you know, I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it, to be honest. I've always been on the side of keeping Monaco in the now quite long-standing debate about whether it deserves a place. And that was quite entertaining, but I don't think it was still a good advert, particularly for F1 or the Monaco Grand Prix in the end.
Yeah, but it was a popular winner, at least, in Sergio Perez, though.
Yeah, definitely. I think Charles maybe would have been a more popular winner, but Checo, he's a decent backup.
Yeah, definitely. But let's dive into your reader comments then. So the debate on Monaco seems to keep on raging on despite the wet. Mark wrote, once the jeopardy of the rain was removed, it was boring. Fernando also wrote, boring, replaced with Germany. Johnny, it's boring for people who don't watch all the races. Alexandros, Monaco is the ultimate bore. It's only good if it rains. So what does the FIA do? Delay the race until it gets dry. Gee, thanks a lot. But Foca also wrote, nice deserved win from Perez, proving he does get the chance to beat Max, and today he did. Maybe a bit lucky, but that's part of racing. Leclerc was a foul mouth as well, which of course is completely understandable. I love these emotions. These are all sort of salient points here, but again, I'm with you. I'm sort of always lean towards keeping Monaco, but they do make the point that when the race did dry up, it turned into what Monaco has been, really.
Yeah, it could have been so good if it started on time. I think we're still not totally clear on what caused the delay. Everyone assumed it was the rain at first. Then there was lots of talk about whether potentially it was a power outage. I think F1 have now come out and said that the second delay was caused by the power outage, which I mean that the first one that caught everyone off guard and had all the mechanics running down with piles of tires was actually just the rain. And that's, as Martin Brundle said numerous times in the build-up, they're the best drivers in the world. Just let them get on with it. And if we had got on with it, they might have cleared enough water by the time that it really did go torrential that they might have been able to carry on. And we at least would have had a really entertaining start with, if you've seen the official tyre start list, it was a real mixed bag. You had the front four on mediums. You had Mercedes on inters. The Williams on softs, a bunch of people on hards. It would have been chaos. It would have been great.
It would have been chaos. I mean, heading down to Sandoval with that massive mixture would have been quite something. But, we were deprived of a standing start as well. I mean, that could have made a massive difference too.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, again, of the official reason for it. They did say that it was to do with drivers benefiting from, just one side of the grid being drier than the other, which I suppose is fair enough. Yeah, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, I think, in that sense, because I think we all would have loved to see a proper standing start.
Yeah, but in the end, you know, it turned into quite an intriguing race, especially among the top four as well. We're running within about 2 seconds of each other come towards the end, especially with Perez being on the medium tire and suffering that graining. I mean, the lockup on the first lap on those tires didn't really help him, did it?
No, and I think it looks like he was trying to avoid a bird, apparently. He did hit a bird, not the same one, I assume, earlier in the weekend. But yeah, apparently someone caught on a still that a bird flew across just in front of him. But yeah, no, he handled it well and he looked great all weekend, Checo. He genuinely seemed to have the measure of Max. Mm. He's been far closer than last year, obviously. And I guess it's a similar starting point for both of them with this car. And yeah, he looked like the better Red Bull driver for pretty much the entire weekend.
And, you know, sometimes that can happen. You know, we all heard Mark Webber's line of not bad for a number two driver, however many years ago it was now. But he really has looked the part this season, Sergio Perez. I mean, you could argue that he was unlucky in Spain as well. And like he now 15 points away from the top of the championship. He looks in this.
He does. Yeah. And like you say, he was definitely unlucky in Spain, whether or not you kind of buy into the whole team orders and whether or not he should have been allowed to let Max through. It was the strategy that got Max in front of him. It wasn't the sheer pace. It was a gamble that Red Bull had to take as Max was stuck behind George and it paid off. But Sergio would have certainly been a deserving winner there as well. And then they're 15 points apart. So the 16-point swing there would put him actually as championship leader, potentially.
Well, you know, no one would begrudge him of that as well, because he's been such an experienced and brilliant Formula One driver. But, you know, we'll see how that pans out in the future. So now let's move on to our driver ratings then. And speaking to us is Planet F1's John Wilde. John, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Henry.
What did you make of the race?
Yeah, enjoyed it like yourself, really. I do think it would have been so much better had it started earlier when the track was a bit wetter. I can absolutely buy into the comments that people have been making about it becoming a bore when the track dried out, but that's what you've got to live with, I'm afraid. It's that's the way it played out, and at least we got we saw the four front runners nose to tail for some of the way, didn't we? And we did think there might be one or two overtakes potentially happening, didn't materialise, but nevertheless, a pleasing result, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. But let's start with Sergio Perez then, seeing as we've been speaking about him already. A 9.5 out of 10 from your ratings. I can't really find any words against that, let's be honest.
No, I think it's a triple positive for me in terms of the win for Perez. Number one, it's a different driver winning a race for only the third time this season. Four wins for Max, two for Leclerc, and now one for Perez. So a different name up on the top step of the podium. Secondly, it kind of wipes the slate clean a little bit, doesn't it, from last Sunday in Barcelona when he was arguably unlucky to have been deprived of the win there. And thirdly, it puts another driver into the world championship battle. I mean, how that'll play out over the remainder of the season, that remains to be seen, because I do think that Red Bull will ultimately want Verstappen to retain his title, but they have to go along with it for the moment, don't they, that Perez is in the fight as well.
Yeah, definitely. And on planetf1.com, we asked for your comments. And Meeson wrote, well done, Checo. That should have been two wins in a row if Red Bull didn't order him last week to let Max win. And Bra, with about four A's at the end, wrote, happy for Perez. Worked out nicely for him this week. A great strategy call from Red Bull as well. I mean, that's something that can't be missed out here, James. The fact that the Red Bull strategy really did play its part, didn't it?
Yeah, no, they got it spot on. I think it was a tricky judgment call, whether you were going to go inters and then dries or just straight to dries. And obviously Carlos showed that you could make either one work. But yeah, Checo got it pretty much bang on. They got the right lap, right tyres, right time.
And I know Leclerc dropped down to fourth in the end, John. We'll come on to him in a minute. But I feel like, I think Perez was actually in the net lead of the race before the second round of stops even.
Yeah, I think that's right. It very much Red Bull certainly out-strategized Ferrari, didn't they, in this race yesterday. I think another thing that is certainly worth a mention is the part that Carlos Sainz played that got him up to second. I know Leclerc was very unlucky, but I was impressed with the way that Sainz was calling the strategy in terms of going straight from the extreme wets to slicks. He called that a good way out, and the team sort of followed up on that move, and it helped him to get a well-deserved second place.
So let's move on to Ferrari now. Charles Leclerc, I mean, there's not a lot that he did wrong throughout the weekend. So fully understandable, the 9 out of 10 rating there, John. He just, the curse continues.
It does. I mean, if there's one positive, a very, very small positive, it's that he's finally got some points on his home track after six races in F2 and F1 without being able to finish. And he even had that that incident in the vintage Ferrari, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago when the brakes failed on him at the Rascasse.
Not his fault, we should say.
absolutely not his fault, but still, nevertheless, another incident he'd want to forget on home turf. But a sublime performance in qualifying, absolutely. I mean, the others were, Perez and Sainz crashed behind him, left the way clear for Leclerc to get the pole. But then obviously it just, it went wrong in the race, didn't it, with the strategy. And he got the 9 out of 10 because he didn't really do anything wrong himself. It's obviously hard to give him more than 9. You couldn't go to a 9.5 or 10 because he didn't win the race ultimately. But I just hope he doesn't become downhearted by the kind of the sort of run he's on at the moment. Obviously, he had the retirement in Barcelona as well. Again, beyond his control, that was. But he's still only 9 points behind in the World Championship. He's still absolutely right in the fight. And if he can get another win under his belts, certainly in Azerbaijan or Canada, then hopefully it'll get his confidence back up to maximum levels and he can sustain the championship fight throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's it, James, isn't it? I mean, it kind of looks like, as stupid as it is, even though he lost a massive lead in the championship, almost damage limitation from the weekend. I mean, hopefully, with the benefit of hindsight, you'd think that he'd be able to sort of accept that and hopefully move on quite quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bitter pill, but it was, compared to the level of the curse recently, maybe it was, it could have been worse. Like you say, so it's the first one he's finished since, 2017, maybe 2016, I know, GP2, I think, he failed as well. So, it's a tough one. And, especially coming 7 days after having a win wrenched away from you at Spain as well. His only real mistake all season has been that moment in Imola. But, there's a long, long way to go yet.
Yeah, definitely, John. I mean, do you think he almost would have preferred a retirement? Because at least there would have been something to account for it rather than his own team's mistake.
No, I don't think he'd ever want a retirement. All about the points, isn't it? Ultimately. Like I say, only 9 points behind. That's you saw the sort of gaps that were overcome last season. 30 odd points Lewis Hamilton made up, didn't he? And so 9's nothing in the grand scheme of things. So, could easily be wiped out during the month of June. You know, we've got a few races then. And it's still possible that going into the summer break, Leclerc could even have, he could have restored that quite sizable lead he had a few races ago.
Absolutely. So now let's move on to the other end of the scale, John. Mick Schumacher, another poor weekend from him, a 3.5 out of 10. I mean, it's Sarah, if we mispronounced that to start with. She wrote, if Mick wasn't a Schumacher, he'd have been dropped already. I mean, I do hope he improves. I mean, we all hope he improves, don't we? But that's quite a hot take there. But another expensive repair bill for Haas that he caused, John.
Absolutely. There's a few things that went through my mind when I saw the Haas was in two pieces after the crash. Firstly, thank goodness he was okay was the main thing. I mean, the last time we saw a Haas in two pieces was in Bahrain in 2020, wasn't it, with Romain Grosjean. Fortunately, there was no fire on this occasion. But obviously, my heart was in my mouth when I saw the car so badly damaged, and it was great to hear him on the radio saying he was okay. But on the other hand, unfortunately, it's happening too often, isn't it, for Mick at the moment? There was the big crash in Jeddah. There was the one in Miami where he took both himself and Sebastian Vettel out of the race when he was battling for his first points. Yeah, it's just, they're just too frequent, these crashes. And like you say, the cost implications for Haas as well with the budget cap. You know, Gunter Steiner and Gene Haas can't be happy. And they must be having quite serious thoughts. Well, I think they've actually said in the post-race comments that they're just wondering quite where they go from here.
That's it, James, isn't it? I mean, where have you stood on Mick this season? Because he's looked closer to Magnussen in the last few races in terms of raw pace, but in terms of actual racecraft, we've spoken before on this podcast about how it looks like he's kind of overdriving to kind of match him. And if there's anywhere that you can't overdrive, it's Monaco.
Yeah, that could be it. I mean, it was obviously such an unknown in terms of a benchmark last year with Mazepin that we all assumed he was doing a good job, but maybe it was just that Mazepin was doing an even worse job. Maybe that Haas wasn't that bad after all. But yeah, it's not a great start. The fact that, yeah, K-Mag came in and totally was on top of him from the start. And yeah, I mean, it does look like he's really trying desperately to get on pace, and he has been closer, but you've got to keep it on the track. That's the bigger issue if you start crashing, especially in a budget cap.
But when does Mick start to worry, John?
Well, I honestly think he should be worried now, in terms of not necessarily in the short term, but in the long term, because, you know, these incidents are going to count against him, you know, going forwards. I don't really see Haas replacing him anytime soon. I think he'll certainly stay for the rest of the season. But beyond that, you know, there's a few sort of, you know, black marks creeping in on his record now. And, you know, other teams who, I mean, I saw him linked with Aston Martin this weekend. I mean, would Aston Martin really want to go for a driver who is having so many incidents? You know, they need somebody who, you know, with Sebastian Vettel coming to the end of his career, they need someone who's going to lift them to that next level. And I don't really see that from Mick Schumacher at the moment.
And one person who could well lift Aston Martin to the next level, John. I mean, you wanted to mention Pierre Gasly. He's the driver who probably made it up the most places in the race, and he actually gave us an overtake.
Yeah, I did, because I've been slightly critical of Gasly this season in one of the previews that we did recently, because I just don't feel as though he's kicked on all that much. He had a really good 2021, you know, qualifying really well. He had a podium as well in Azerbaijan, but it's not really happened for him this season. In fact, Yuki Tsunoda's been on top of him in a few races. He had a dreadful qualifying, of course, not his fault. He was caught out by the red flag. So he started down in 17th, but he made, you know, a really good decision to go on to Inters right at the start of the race. And that gave him some extra pace compared to the cars around him. And he pulled off a couple of overtakes, and he was the focus of the TV coverage for a little while there as he got past Zhou Guan Yu and Daniel Ricciardo. Unfortunately, it didn't yield any points for him. His progress kind of stalled after that, and he finished just behind Sebastian Vettel in the end, I think, and 11th place. But a dynamic drive from Gasly, and hopefully it'll give him some confidence after what's been a bit of a steady start to the campaign.
Yeah, that's it, James, isn't it? He might well have come away without any points, but to gain 6th places at Monaco, you don't really see many people doing that, do you?
No, it was pretty an impressive move through the field early on. And yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of bad luck. I know what you're saying. He's not reached the levels of, he was so consistent last year, but he's even here, he didn't get into Q2 through no fault of his own, really didn't make it to the line by half a second. And yeah, I think there's plenty more to come, and he does still have a point to prove. He now needs to back up and prove that he can do this consistently if he is going to move to a bigger team.
Well, John, we'll speak to you a little bit later on, but thank you very much for taking us through your ratings this weekend.
Yeah, pleasure, Henry.
And now we'll move on to our race conclusions, and to take us through that would be Planet F1's Oliver Harden. Oliver, how are you?
Yep, very well, Henry, thank you.
What did you make of things this weekend?
I enjoyed it. You know, there's been a lot of debate around Monaco's place on the calendar, whether F1 has outgrown it. I think, you know, F1 did fail to make the most of the weather on Sunday, but in the end, you know, I don't think you can complain when you have four cars finishing within nose to tail of each other at the end. It was an enjoyable race, I thought.
Yeah, and let's dive straight into your conclusions. That Sergio Perez looking right back on it from your point of view as well.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of sympathy for him, you know, after Spain. Some might say, you know, it shouldn't have come as news to him that Red Bull would probably, you know, prefer Max over him to win races. But that's another story. I think when drivers are perceived to have been done over by their own teams, you always worry about the emotional and the psychological impact on them. But Perez's response in Monaco was amazing. He was the faster Red Bull driver throughout the weekend. I think he outpaced Verstappen in every session, apart from Q1. And it was a really, really good performance by him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I might have overheard this incorrectly, James, but I think you said something along the lines of talk about new contract tomorrow, yeah, to Christian Horner as they're going up on the podium. And, you know, for him to bounce back like that, we've spoken on the podcast, especially after Spain, you know, saying that he probably knows his place within the team, but he's not going down with that fight.
Yeah, no, it's great to see. And I think it's been so long since we've had two drivers fighting in a Red Bull, obviously since Max and Daniel, really they've never really had anyone to truly challenge Max. It'd be nice if he can keep this going and maybe make them question, you know, whether Max is, I mean, he's always going to be the Red Bull golden boy, but if he can just put that slight hint of doubt in their minds that maybe they could actually support him as well, that'd be good to see.
Yeah, who knows, eh? But I think we've left it long enough without talking about Ferrari, haven't we? With those strategies. Carlos Sainz pretty much picked his own strategy, but we need to speak about Charles Leclerc's one, don't we? He was understandably very, very annoyed over the radio, Oliver, wasn't he?
Yeah, totally understandably. You know, obviously the curse goes on for him. He's never won his own race, never even stood on the podium. And, you know, for so much of this weekend, he looked finally to get into grips with Monaco and finally winning at last. I think his performance in qualifying in particular was almost ballistic. It was, I think it was 4 tenths up at the time. The red flag was waved to bring the session to a premature conclusion. As the rain fell, you kind of felt, you know, this is another hurdle for him to overcome, and he was negotiating it brilliantly in the opening phase of the race. But yeah, again, it all went upside down with another dodgy Ferrari strategy call.
That's it, James. Ferrari seemed to Ferrari themselves as well. And looking at through your comments, Glyn wrote, only one conclusion, Ferrari screwed up Charles's race from a sure win at home. Mohan writes, the problem with Ferrari is they want to be clever every single time. The best strategy is to take risks only when necessary or when the stakes are high. When you're ahead, you always mirror the strategy of your opponent. And that's been the modus operandi so far. There was no need for Ferrari to try to be clever. You don't have to be win by a mile. You just have to win. But, you know, it seems to be a good point there. I mean, Ferrari just, they just Ferrari'd themselves again, needlessly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they were trying to be too clever. I think it was just panicking, if anything, to be honest. And yeah, like you say, it is backing up the Ferrari that we all know and love. Oh, potentially not love, depending on your perspective. Yeah. but they became the first team not to win at the Monaco Grand Prix after locking out the front row since Ferrari in 2008, which kind of sums it up. I mean, Carlos making his own strategy was taking a leaf out of Seb's book when he had to become the chief Ferrari strategist in his time there as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But let's talk a bit about Carlos Sainz, because that was another one of your conclusions, Oliver. I mean, he was very clever in the sense that, I don't know if he sensed that something was going to come his way, but he really took matters into his own hands, and that paid off for him in the end.
Yeah, I think it really showed his intelligence, you know, his kind of strength of character to say, you know, this is what I'm going to do, trust me and stick with it. It reminded me very much of the 2016 race. I think the abiding memory of that race is when Red Bull messed up in the pits with Ricciardo, cost him the win to Hamilton. But a big part of Hamilton's performance that day was the decision to go straight from extreme wets to slicks. So he missed the transitional phase with the intermediates, and that really made the race for him. I, you know, if Sainz was in that race, it wouldn't have been too big a surprise if that was on his mind at the beginning of the race, as he was kind of thinking, you know, where best to go from here.
Yeah, and James, he sort of didn't blame Nicholas Latifi, but he got stuck behind Latifi for his outlap, basically, and he reckoned that cost him the win in the end. I mean, it's his ninth podium now without winning. I mean, he's slowly creeping up on the Nick Heidfeld scale, isn't he?
Yeah.
he's getting there.
Yeah, I was going to say, Heidfeld had 13, I think.
13, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he's getting dangerously close. Surely he'll get his first win at some point this season. But I'm glad you mentioned Latifi, because I was going to say about the Williams, because yeah, Latifi went past, I think, 8 or so blue flags with Carlos behind him. And Albon went past 10 with Charles behind him. And I've seen the footage of that, and it's pretty bad. It was an entire lap. And the only reason he gets out of the way in the end is because he locks up and goes straight on at turn one. And that's, I mean, yeah, so each Williams has cost a Ferrari a place each. So, yeah.
that's not the impact they would have wanted on the weekend, Oliver. But from their point of view, I think it's only meant to be three blue flags maximum, isn't it, that you're meant to go past? So why weren't they penalised in that case?
Well, yeah, it's obviously very difficult in Monaco in terms of, you know, the traffic. It's a typical hazard there. But yeah, it did seem to cost Sainz the win. A real shame for him because, as I say, you know, the strategy was very clever from him.
Yeah, and James as well. It was a weekend where not necessarily second drivers, but second drivers in the championship seemed to get one over on their teammates as well. And to do it at a place like Monaco, I mean, both Sainz and Perez should hopefully take a lot of confidence from that, right?
Yeah, you'd think so. And it's leveled out the standings a bit. Carlos has still got a fair way to catch up after his less than ideal start to the season. But yeah, it kind of showed that it isn't maybe just going to be the Max and Charles show this year.
And let's hope it isn't. But another team who took something of a step back, Oliver, was Mercedes. They did not look comfortable all weekend. I mean, George Russell, again, he deserves massive plaudits for keeping up his run of staying in the top five at every race this season. But that W13 just didn't look comfortable, did it?
Yeah, it seems like they finally cracked the code in Barcelona. Obviously, Russell held back Verstappen for so long. Toto Wolff said Hamilton would have been in contention with the win if it wasn't for the first lap incident with Magnussen. I think, you know, Monaco has come at a bad time in their recovery, actually. You know, it's a very unique circuit with very specific demands. There was a lot of talk about suspension stiffness and ride height being to blame this time for the lack of performance. And, you know, I think it was a bump in the road in terms of their recovery. And I think a more accurate reflection of the progress they're making will come as we return to more conventional and expansive circuits.
Yeah, definitely. And James, is Lewis Hamilton getting stuck behind Fernando Alonso. I mean, going 3 seconds or 4 seconds a lap slower than he could have done. For the closing stages of the race, you could argue, I don't think you could really argue, but it's pretty clear that Alonso almost backed the pack up into the leaders again, even though it was only like less than half a race. I mean, Hamilton was surprisingly relaxed about that afterwards. I wouldn't have had as much patience as him.
Yeah, no, I've actually been pretty impressed with how he's taken. I mean, there's one thing is sure, the man is not blessed at the moment.
No.
That is another, one to add to his list of horrible luck since about lap 52 of Abu Dhabi last year.
Yeah.
Q3, he didn't get to do his run on the fresh set of tyres. It was just a used set. And then, getting stuck behind Ocon, who was on a mission to keep him behind and put him in the wall, and then his old mate Fernando in shades of 2007, as I'm sure as he followed him around the streets of the principality. But I honestly don't really understand. I know that Alonso was trying to nurse his tires and they were worried about whether they would get to the end, but that begs the question, why did they put them on? Because if it was just a case of defending sevens, you know, you're not going to lose that pretty sure around Monaco. And all he did was push his teammate back into the pack so that the 5 second penalty saw him lose his points position.
Yeah, and Oliver, he finally gave it a bootful towards the last sort of 10, 15 minutes or so, and it showed that there was pace there. But by that time, I think he was about 40 seconds behind Lando Norris in front. And that, you know, that highlights not just the challenge of Monaco and overtaking and everything, but the fact that driving that far within yourself, that's not going to help anyone, is it?
Yeah, but I think also that's part of the game at Monaco. I don't think anybody is, you know, ever driving at 10 tenths. It was almost if Alonso was toying with Hamilton, especially, you know, he's driving really slow, keeping him behind, and then unleashes. I think one of his laps towards the end was about 4 seconds quicker than he'd come previously. So, it's just about controlling the conditions in Monaco, and Alonso did that very well.
And we just have time for a quick little chat about Monaco itself. So we're going to bring John back in now. A lot of chat has gone on about Monaco's place on the calendar. It's the final year of the current contract that it has to actually host the race, and there are quite a few voices that are hoping for it to sort of leave the calendar. So on planetf1.com, Caetano writes, "Hopefully this is the last Monaco Grand Prix. This really shouldn't be a racetrack. This can't be called a racetrack if there's zero possibility of overtaking, even with a car 3 seconds slower ahead of you. If it rains like today, it's really just a pure gamble with strategy." And
And then Joe writes, I've got to say, this race was, to say the least, not a good advertisement for keeping Monaco on the schedule. Sentimental issues aside, this race is usually bad enough, but without a standing start, it became the usual boring procession, but this time with no possibility for any passes on the start. So the race is decided by a stupid strategy call from Ferrari. And there were how many actual overtakes? I remember one, definitely not worth watching in my opinion. But let's come to you first, John. I mean, Monaco's place in the calendar, it may not actually appear on the calendar next season, which in itself feels very strange, despite the fact that you can't really overtake there.
Yeah, I think they're talking about possibly rotating a few races, aren't they? There's so many races now clamouring for a place on the schedule that some of them are going to have to give way eventually. And there's talk of perhaps Monaco, France, Belgium might all be sort of rotated on and off the calendar year by year. I mean, that might even be the best solution for Monaco because, you know, if people are fed up with it because of the lack of spectacle it provides, perhaps maybe they could cope with it every other year rather than every year, something like that. But I think it just comes down to how much of a traditionalist you are, really, whether you like races that have a great history and heritage. Personally, I don't want to see it go because it's one of the first races I can ever remember watching. And so I do have a bit of affection for it that way. But I also do understand, you know, that people want to see overtaking. That's kind of the modern mentality now, the attitude of Formula One fans. They want to see sort of non-stop action. And so I can see why it doesn't satisfy them in that way. But I also do think it would be very sad if it disappeared permanently.
That's a good point, Oliver, isn't it? The sort of traditionalist element of it. I mean, I said in our preview episode that it is the ultimate test of a driver's skill, but in terms of entertainment value, it really isn't up there. I mean, where do you stand on Monaco's future?
I've always enjoyed it. It brings a unique challenge. The racing isn't always the best, but, you know, the skill of the driver is really on show in Monaco. I think it's become clear over the, you know, this weekend that the threats to its place on the calendar is part of a negotiation strategy. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, competing watch brands and, you know, F1 unhappy with the race direction, Monaco's own TV direction. So, you know, you'd like to think there could be a suitable resolution found.
Yeah, you'd imagine so, James. There's the talk just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? But Monaco has always had preferential treatment as well. And in a world where Formula One is trying to maximize profits and things, I mean, you can understand why Monaco don't want to give that up. But from Formula One's perspective, you can kind of get where they're coming from, even if, you know, their argument's probably going to be, well, you know, Hockenheim are offering this much, you know, Spa are offering this much. And, you know, it's... Ultimately, it's a business at the end of the day, isn't it? And Formula One have got to do the best deal for themselves.
Yeah. Like I said at the start, I've always been pro Monaco in the debate. This weekend did make me question it a bit. I think not just through the lack of racing, because I know, like John says, it doesn't have to be non-stop action. It's Monaco. Saturday kind of makes up for Sunday to some extent. Just the spectacle comes through, just seeing the drivers on the limit between, you know, the narrow walls. But It wasn't a good weekend. It wasn't well dealt with. The power outages or whatever, maybe you can say these things happen, but they don't seem to happen anywhere else. The race direction wasn't great. We missed K-Mag retiring entirely. And yeah, I don't know, maybe it's almost the stubbornness of Monaco and the people who organize it. Maybe they need to take a little step back and say, okay, what can we do to make this better rather than just getting locked in the tradition of it?
Exactly, James. The fact that the streets aren't going to change, are they? But the cars keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then that makes overtaking less and less likely. They're probably not just victims of their own sort of preferential treatment on the calendar, but probably Formula One's changes over the years as well.
Yeah, no, it's like you say, it stayed the same since we were in cars that were about as wide as a person with their elbows hanging out. And now we've got these boats. And yeah, I mean, I think there could be little changes they could make. Obviously, they're very limited by the streets, but I'm sure there's something if they really looked into it that they could do to just give a slight chance of an overtake here or there.
Either way, let's hope they find some kind of resolution. And James, Oliver, John, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to you for watching as well. Make sure you head to planetf1.com, where we will keep you updated all the way through from Monaco to Baku in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you very much for watching Talking Point or listening to it as well. Remember, if you can't watch, you can find us on all regular podcast providers. And thank you very much again, and we will see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News & World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.